Today is Friday, January 6, 2017, the 7th? 8th? 8th of Tevis? Yeah, the 8th. The 10th is on Sunday. Yeah, so the 8th of Tevis. Tavshinayin Zayin. I'd like to speak about towards the end of Perek Yud Zayin. So we have our first meeting of the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. That's the discussion at the very end of the parak. And I'd like to discuss how this is applicable of Bizman Hazeh. What do the psukim say? The psukim tell this story. And then it says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, in Pasuk Yudalet, in 14, Hashem says to Moshe, Ksov zo zikar b'zeh from Sima Zne Yeshua, write this down and make sure it gets to Yeshua. Ki machoim cheh zeich Amalek nitachas Hashemayim. That must certainly erase the memory of Amalek from under the heavens, and Moshe built the Mizveach, and everything is fine. Now, this mitzvah is spelled out again later on. In Parshas Kisetze, see if there's any, if it sounds any different to you. So in Parshas Kisetze, on page 1066, it says, "Remember what Amalek did to you, and when you left Mitzrayim, Mishir Kar Chavadar, Fizneich Machal Kol Mishim Acharech, Metal Yefei Gevel Yerei Elokim." Okay, and the pasuk tells, "Vayavi Niach Hashem Elokech Elokham Mikol Oyvecha Misaviv." That was when Hashem will give you rest from all your enemies all around. Ba'aretz Asher Hashem Elokech Mesein Lachad Nachlal Rishta Timchezeich Amalek, and all around the land of Hashem, your God will give you inheritance to possess it. You shall wipe out the memory of Amalek from under the heaven, right? Lo tishka, and you shall not forget. Okay, so those are the two descriptions. Is there any difference between the two?
Okay, the first one, Hashem saying he'll wipe them out, and this one, he's instructing us to wipe.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah, Hashem says I will do it, and this one he's saying you have to make sure to do it. Okay. Could be. No, I was focusing. Not about focus. I just said, yeah.
The question is also talking about,
The second time around, it's a mitzvah. I mean, all the mitzvahs that are, what the status is of mitzvahs that are given before Matan Torah is a question. And I think all of them get repeated later on at some point. So, yet there are things that are learned out from the first time it's described and the last time it's described. I mean, the mitzvah of Bris Milah is mentioned later on. The mitzvah of Gidon Asha is mentioned later on. I'm pretty sure it's mentioned later on. So there are two descriptions, and that we should keep in mind as we continue to learn forward. So there is this applicable Bizman Hazeh? So there is a famous statement that Rav Soloveitchik quotes in the name of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. In fact, it is so famous that it even makes it into the fancy Frankel Rambams. And what is let's present it this way: the Rav, in his famous address, Kol Dodi Dofeik. What was Kol Dodi Dofeik? That was a drasha given in the mid 50s, I believe, where the Rav pronounced his allegiance with the Mizrahi movement. I think it was given on Yom Ha'atzmaut or right before Yom Ha'atzmaut. It's one of the, if not the most famous address that the Rav ever gave, and definitely in the top five. There he spells out the six knocks, where Kol Dodi Dofeik, the voice of my beloved is knocking. It's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, where the Rav describes that, the Shir HaShirim is describing a woman that is already ready to go. She's waiting for her lover, and the lover never showed up, and then she's in bed, and all of a sudden she hears a knock on the door. And the Shir HaShirim describes how she says, like, oh, I'm too tired right now, I'm not able to go to the door, etc. So the Rav spelled out, said, a brilliant homiletical interpretation. So the Kaddish Baruch Hu is knocking. I mean, it's not, this part isn't brilliant. This is the simple pshat, is that really is talking about Hashem knocking. And B'nai Yisrael, are we really ready to go and answer the door? So the Rav, what the Rav described as the six knocks, the famous six knocks, had to do with the founding of, there are things having to do with the state of Israel. Kadosh Baruch Hu knocked by six specific things, and the Rav spelled them out. And it's our challenge: are we going to answer to those knocks? So he just talks about the announcement of the in the UN, and then the win in the war for independence, and the being able to survive the Nazis. And that's where he talked with the Rav. Talk, one of the knocks is that now, after thousands of years, Jewish blood is no longer hefker. Jewish blood is no longer free. That's also one of these. I forget, I don't have all six at the tip of my tongue right now, but they're pretty easy to find. So over the course of that address, the Rav makes, it's called in Hebrew, called the Dido Fake, and in English, it was really made into a separate book called Fate and Destiny. I thought it was on the shelves there, but I haven't been able to find it on the shelf here in the library, but very important work. So the Rav comments as follows, that divine providence is testing us once again via the crisis that has overtaken the land of Israel. I assume he's referring to the Suez, the Sinai campaign. That was, I think, the era that he was talking about during this time. So the matter does not just affect the political future of the land of Israel. The designs of the Arabs are directed not just against the political sovereignty of the state of Israel, but against the very existence of the Yishuv in the land of Israel. They wish to destroy, heaven forbid, the entire community, both men and women, infant, suckling, ox, and sheep. Anybody know what that pasuk is? That pasuk is the command given to Shaul to destroy Amalek. Right? So they're saying they want to destroy all of us. They don't want to just kick us out of the land. They want us all dead. At a Mizrahi convention, I cited the view expressed by my father and master Moshe Soloveitchik, blessed in memory, that's a proclamation. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Right? So that's our pasuk. Right? But even where it says, Right. The last pasuk, "Vayomer ki yad al kis ya nochama laHashem baAmalek midor dor," that God is fighting with Amalek from each generation. So what does it mean? Does not only translate onto the communal exercise of waging obligatory war against a specific race. It's not just about Amalek in terms of ben achar ben, child after child, tracing itself back to Amalek, who was the child of Esav. Grandson of Esav, but includes as well the obligation to rise up as a community against any people or group that, filled with maniacal hatred, directs its enmity against Knesset Yisrael. When a people emblazons on its banner, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, and the name of Israel may no more be in remembrance. That's a pasuk in Tehillim. It becomes Amalek. By definition, it's Amalek. So in the 30s and 40s, the Nazis, with Hitler at their head, filled this role. They were the Amalekites, the standard bearer of insane hatred and enmity towards the era just passed. Today, their place has been taken over by the mobs of Nasser and the Mufti. If we are silent now as well, I know not the verdict that will be issued against God of justice. Do not rely on the liberal world sense of equity. Those same righteous liberals were around 15 years ago, and they looked with indifference upon the extermination of millions of people. They did not even lift a finger. If heaven forbid yet a second spectacle of blood were to take place before their very eyes, it is likely they would not even lose a night's sleep over it. Okay, so this is over 60 years ago, and it sounds like it could be written today. Just cross out the words Nasser and Mufti and put in the words Hamas and Arafat. What?
Even J Street.
Okay, we're not going to go there, but maybe cross out liberals and put in J Street. Okay. I'm not sure I would call them a Malik, but to cross out Nasser and the Mufti, you could put in Abbas and Hamas. Yeah. Okay, so that's quite a claim that he made, right? Where is his justification to make this claim that Amalek is not a nation, but rather it's a state of being? So there is a pretty lengthy footnote that is put into that, and it's really based on a diuk in the Rambam, two Rambams that follow back to back. So the Rambam in Perek Hay Halacha Dalet, in the laws of Hilchos Malachim. So Hilchos Malachim were at the very end of the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. The first couple sections deals with how to deal with non-Jews, then talks to several of these halachos of the seven nations and Amalek, etc. And then it gets into the laws of Mashiach. There's three prakim about how the Rambam envisions the period of Mashiach coming, which is probably the main halachic text for how people understand the time of Mashiach coming. So the Rambam writes in Perek Hay Halacha Dalet, and shows the mitzvah sati lahakrim shiva amim shemar frim tafrim. It's a mitzvah to annihilate the seven nations, as it says, annihilate them. V'chol shebali yado echad mehen. If one comes into your hand below harga, you don't kill them. I raise it over below tasei shemar lo tichyak kol neshama. You violate a prohibition, as the pasuk says, you shall not allow one to live. And this is not about Amalek. This is about the seven nations. So then the Rambam concludes by saying, however, ukfar avdu v'avad zichrama. However, they're already gone, and the remembrance is gone. And therefore, you don't have to worry about it. Why don't you have to worry about it? So the Rabbah says, where did they go? Right? Where? How are they gone? So the Rabbah says, well, we know that Sancheiruv came and mixed everybody up. So they mixed everybody up, so therefore we don't have to worry about their destruction. That's halacha dalet. Halacha hey, one halacha, the next, very next halacha, v'chein mitzvah zase la'abi zera malik. And so too the mitzvah zase to destroy the seed of a malik, she'emar timcha zecher a malik. What's he saying there? It sounds like the same obligation. Just as it's a mitzvah to destroy all seven nations, there's also a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. However,
he wasn't one of the seven.
Amalek's not one of the seven, yeah. Right? Right.
I thought that we didn't have to destroy them; we could destroy them out of the land. They gave a choice.
You could give them a choice, right? But seven nations in the land of Israel. Okay. So, umitzvahs ase lizkor tamin ma'isav aroyim v'arivaso, and it's mitzvahs ase to remember their things, in order to build our hatred towards them, shemar zechor ase sheres alacham, alek bifi ashmo, lam du zechor v'fev lo tishkach b'lev. So we understand that it's not just to remember it in your heart, but to remember it by mouth, she'asu lishkoch yivaso v'finos. We're not allowed to forget it, and that, of course, is the source, is at least, I don't know the source, but the beginning of the mitzvah of Parshas Zachor that we read every year. So the... So the question is raised, wait a second, what did the Rambam leave out of Amalek that he included with regards to the seven nations? What did the Rambam leave out in his description of, Amalek? So he says, it is however striking and passing strange that Maimonides, in setting forth the commandment to wipe out Amalek, does not add the concluding phrase, but their memory has long since perished. It only says that by the seven nations and not by Amalek. Thus says Rambam in the Laws of Kings and their Wars, similarly it is a positive commandment to destroy the remembrance of Amalek, as it says, thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek. It is also a positive commandment to remember always his evil deed, right, etc. Fine, the traditional interpretation of the deduction is to remember, okay. It would appear that Maimonides' statement that Amalek is still in existence, while the seven nations have descended into the abyss of oblivion. Why did the Rambam apply the principle that Sancheiruv came and mixed everybody up? So he says, I once heard the following answer from my father, namely that any nation that conspires to destroy Knesset Yisrael becomes, according to Halacha, a Malik. My father added, we have been charged with two commands concerning a Malik. The first is the obligation to blot out his memory. The obligation devolves upon every person with reference to an individual Malikite, as set forth in the verse, thou shalt blot out the remembrance of a Malik. The second is the readiness to do battle as a community against the people of Malik. This requirement is set forth in the verse, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Thus, if any people seek to destroy us, we are commanded to do battle against it. When it arises up against us, and this battle is our obligation, etc. And then he says, there still exists a category of Amalek, even now after the people have been intermingled, and there are no longer any individual Amalek, but there are no longer individuals. So any nation that accepts upon itself to destroy all Jews, so they qualify as a Malik. So that's a pretty big thing. The Rambam, he's saying this is the halacha, right? So that means that we would treat any Hamas, he's claiming, treat any Hamas member as a Malik, right? Treat any Nazi as a Malik, treat, right? So even Sam is getting a little, that's tough. So what do we do with that? Is that really... Did he, first of all, did he really mean that? Right? Did he mean that as a din? Did he mean that as a as like a homiletical device? Now it's interesting. He's actually quoted. It's known that when the Frankel Rambam came out, so there's been a new edition to the Rambam. It's not so new anymore. In the last 30, 40 years, they took back all the manuscripts of the Rambam, put it together, corrected all the manuscripts, and then in the back included something called the Sefer HaMafteach. What's in the Sefer HaMafteach? So anybody who comes after the Rambam that discusses that Rambam is put in the Sefer HaMafteach. So it is it's quite a research tool. I mean, any time you have a question about the Rambam, take a look in the back. He sends you to all the Achronim that talk about this, except he doesn't include Achronim that fall under fall in the Rav Kook Zionist camp or in the modern Orthodox camp. So generally, Rav Soloveitchik is not mentioned anywhere in the Mafteach. Rav Kook is not mentioned anywhere in the Mafteach. And that, I'm not saying yes or no, I'm just saying that that's a fact. That's the way it is. So apparently, this is the one time...
It's
put by... It was put in the Haredi world. I'm not commenting on that. It's just saying that that's the fact.
I mean, if you're writing a book,
We're not discussing it right now. I don't know if time. So anyways, this is apparently, Rabbi Gil's student points out on his blog, that apparently this is maybe the only time that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik is quoted. Now, where do you find Rav Moshe Soloveitchik? So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Luva B'Sefer B'Sod HaYachid V'HaYachad. What's that Sefer? So it was written by the Rav. It was one of the Rav's pamphlets that he put out, where he quotes this idea from his father. So that actually merited to make it into, so it's prominent enough to make it into the Sefer HaMafteach of the Rambam, supposedly. Yeah. So there are, however, a few passages with this. There is someone named Rav Rabinowitz. I believe he is the Rav of Malei Adumim, Nachum Rabinowitz, where he claims that the Rav Moshe must have only meant this as a homiletical tool. And he brings a couple of rayas, two rayas from the Rambam himself. The Rambam has several other books, as we know. One of them is the Sefer HaMitzvos. Sefer HaMitzvos, one can argue whether it is or isn't a completely separate book from the Yadach HaZakah, because the Yadach HaZakah was written to describe the 613 mitzvahs. So it's might either see the basis of the Mishnah Torah, or it's a separate book. But either way, the Rambam in Mitzvos Asei, number Kuf Pei Zayin, so he discusses the mitzvah of destroying Amalek and destroying the seven nations. And the Rambam comments that, wait a second, why should we include this as a mitzvah? It's not a mitzvah Lidoros. The Rambam, in his rules of setting up what's a mitzvah, what's not a mitzvah, only included mitzvahs that were going to be for all generations. So, for example, the mitzvah to Bnei Yisrael to not climb up on Har Sinai doesn't get counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs, because that was only for that period, not to climb up on Har Sinai as soon as they moved on, so the Kedusha of Har Sinai left. Similarly, you know, all those things that Hashem says to do explicitly in the Midbar, to write down the Torah at Har, or to make the announcements at Har Gviza and Har Eval. So that's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. So it was only mitzvahs that are for all generations. So first of all, the Rambam does include all the mitzvahs having to do with Korbanos. So yeah, that is for all generations, when the right conditions exist. When there is a base of Mikdash, you have all these mitzvahs. So it is going to be a continuous mitzvah. It wasn't just for the time that people were in Eretz Yisrael. So what about this? What about the mitzvah of killing the seven nations? So the Rambam says, that is a mitzvah Lidoros. Now it's true that the conditions don't exist to do that mitzvah today, because they've been messed around and sent all over the place and mixed together. So conditions don't exist, but technically the mitzvah is still in existence. It's just dormant for the time being.
It was done already, though.
It was never completely done.
Never sure. Well,
it was never completely done. Yeshua, well, seven nations wasn't completely done. Amalek, that it just never was finished. And Amalek also, we'll get to Amalek shortly.
No, it's not done.
Well, maybe we'll get to that shortly. But
it's a generation.
Hold on, okay. Anyways, so the Rambam says, so we're not going to have time. So I know it's my fault, but we're not going to have time. So the Rambam, however, says that included on that list, he says also the mitzvah to destroy Amalek, just like the mitzvah of seven nations. Right. It is a mitzvah. It's just not applicable right now because the conditions don't exist for its application. But it's still the mitzvah that exists today. So what is it we seem to be saying from that Sefer HaMitzvos? So it sounds like from that Sefer HaMitzvos that Amalek has gone the same way as the seven nations, right? That they also don't exist anymore. So furthermore, the Rambam in his in the Mora Nevuchim in Chelek Gimel number chapter 50. So the Rambam says a very interesting thing. We talked about this last year when we learned the end of Parshas Vayishlach. It describes the genealogy of Esav and describes the genealogy of Seir. Why do we care about Seir? Now it's true that there was some intermarriage between the two of them, but why do we care about the genealogy of Seir? So the Mora Nevuchim says, very interesting thing, that we know Amalek is one of the grandchildren of Esav. And we know that their families were intermingling with one another. And when Amalek moved south, Amalek is known to be in the Negev, someplace down there. So when Amalek moved south, it wasn't just Amalek that moved down there. It was Amalek and all their relatives and their cousins and the people from Seir. So the Rambam says, why do we have to explicitly mention the specific genealogy? Because there's a mitzvah to kill the children of Amalek, and there's no mitzvah to kill the children of Seir. Right? So therefore, the Torah has to be very careful to give us the specific genealogy about who's considered a child of Amalek versus a child of Seir. How's that going to be helpful 4,000 years later? Unclear. But what does the Rambam seem to be implying? The implication of that is that it is a genealogical issue as opposed to a svara issue, as opposed to a as opposed to a logic issue, right? It has to do with what the genealogy is, right? That's what it sounds like from there. So how do you then understand the Rambam? So this Rav Nachum Rabinowitz says, he says, no, it's like you got to look carefully at that Rambam. There is a word that we kind of glanced over. Maybe yes, maybe no. We took it to mean one thing. And he says you have to expand the meaning of that word. There's a key word. What is the key word? End. Or end also. That Rambam in Dalit says is a mitzvah to kill all the seven nations, and the Chol Shebal Yado, and when one comes into your hand, you have to destroy them. But don't worry, they've already been mixed together. Then the Rambam continues, and also there's a mitzvah to destroy a Malik in the same way. So Rav Moshe took that to mean, yeah, there's a mitzvah to destroy a Malik in the same way, their children and all descendants of them. And then Rav Moshe then says, but they're still around. Says Rav Rabinowitz, no. V'chein applies to the whole halacha. Just as there's a mitzvah to destroy all the seven nations, there's also a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. And just as the seven nations are already gone, so to Amalek is already gone. So says Rav Rabinowitz. That's a pretty good title. That's a pretty good title. How do you argue against that? So Rabbi Gil's student in a blog posting on Torah Musings says, hold on a second. It could be that Rav Moshe would accept that. It could be that you could even, that Rav Moshe would accept that distinction that Rabinowitz is making. And saying, well, not really a distinction, saying, no, even Amalek is out, but if you look carefully at the Rav's footnote that we quoted from, the Rav himself points out that there's two dinim in destroying Amalek. There is the mitzvah incumbent upon the individual, and there is a mitzvah incumbent on the tzibur, on the congregation. So what is the one that is not applicable anymore, because we don't know who specifically each member of Amalek is? That might be the individual mitzvah. Right. The mitzvah that I walk down the street and I see some guy wearing an Amalek sweatshirt, and he says, I'm a full-blown, authentic Amalekite, so I'm now going to take out my spear and stab him to death, right? Or take my hands and choke the guy to death. That's perhaps is not applicable. That halacha is specific to one person. Right? But the mitzvah incumbent on the tzibur, and that's the mitzvah, by the way, that's described at the end of Parshas Ki Tetzei. The mitzvah that's incumbent on the congregation, that it's a national mitzvah, that might still be incumbent with Van Azeh. The mitzvah of man on man, that might not apply. But the mitzvah that if a nation just says that we're going to destroy the entire human people, the Jewish people as a congregation have a responsibility to fight against them, maybe that's still applicable. That part still applies as well as that. That's what he suggested. Maybe that's what Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was implying by talking about the two different dinim, right? So the mitzvah, again, Ki Tetzei is the mitzvah on the individual, and the mitzvah at the end of Shavuos is talking about the mitzvah on the congregation, the mitzvah on the tzibur. Yeah. There is, by the way, how do we see what is perhaps the idea that Amalek is still around? Who is the most recent Amalekite?
Iran.
Right. No. That is identified as an Amalekite by the Torah as an Amalekite.
Haman.
Very good. Haman is identified. Very good. Haman is identified in the Gemara itself. Yud Gimel Amud Aleph in Megillah. He's identified as being a member of Amalek. How is he identified there? So it says that Yehuda and that there's a pasuk that says we have problems with Yehuda and we have problems with Binyamin. Why do we have problems with Yehuda? Because if it wasn't for Yehuda, I have to go again. If it wasn't for Yehuda, all right, Mordechai comes from Yehuda, and Mordechai is the one who caused all the problems. Because if Mordechai would have bowed down to Haman, so then Haman wouldn't have had it in for us.
Well, he's
from both. Ish Yehudi, Hayav Ishan, Abraham, Mordechai. And we have a problem with Binyamin as well. Right. Why do we have a problem with Binyamin? Because if Shaul would have just done what he was supposed to and killed Agag, so Mordechai, Haman wouldn't have come from him. So one second, how did Haman come from, what's that talking about? So Haman is known as Haman Agagi, Haman ben Adasa Agagi. Right? What?
Yeah.
That question is who's Agagi.
Well, we know who Agagi was. Agagi was Agag. Agagi was the right. Agagi was the name of the king, right? So perhaps this is another suggestion to defend Rav Soloveitchik. Wait a second. Are we the first ones to come up with this idea? Are we the first ones to come up with this idea that a malik is not a genealogical feature, but rather it is a state of mind?
Right.
So he says it could be that that's how one understands the idea that Haman was a member of a malik. Because what happened to Agag? Agag, so what, how does that story go? Shaul is commanded to kill the entire, all the people, and all the animals, and all the men, all the women and children, etc. And he allowed the animals to live, and he allowed Agag to live.
Right.
And Shmuel, and it sounds like, what? It sounds like he already killed Agag's wife, he killed all of Agag's kids. The only remaining Amalekite is Agag. So how does the story continue? That ultimately Shmuel comes in, and Shmuel goes and kills Agag. Right,
but he had a relationship.
Ah, so if Shmuel killed Agag, so how did he possibly? How did Haman come from him?
Right.
So the Midrashim over there say, oh, that night Agag was able to get a hold of some maidservant, he impregnated her, and that's how the seed of Amalek is able to continue.
Right.
But comes in the Das Mikra here, the Das Mikra says, no, the Minachorim Yesh Shemisharim, Sheagag Zeh, this is Das Mikra in Perek Gimel of Esther, where Haman is first introduced. So Sheagag Zeh, Eino Agag Melech Amalek, Agag doesn't mean the king of Amalek, El Shemishbacha Parsis, it's the Persian last name. V'yesh misharim shayehudim kinu agagi al shem Rishel. That they called him an agagi because of his evilness. Evil. Because of his the fact that he was evil. K'moshe gam hayom noagim l'chanos goy rasha sone Yisrael amalek. Just like nowadays. We call a goy sone Yisrael amalek. So it's not that Haman is coming directly from Agag. Rather, it's that they called him an Agagite, and somebody from Agag, because he was somebody who went after the Jew, which obviates the whole necessity for that medrash, right? The simple explanation is that Agag is sitting in prison, he didn't have some conjugal visit, and Shmuel comes and kills him the next day. So how is it that Haman comes from Agag? He didn't come from Agag. So why do we call him from Amalek? Because Haman had in mind to kill the entire Jewish people. Anybody who has in mind to kill the entire Jewish people, guess what? We refer to him as a Malik. So perhaps that's another defense, that perhaps is even a riot, that's a proof for Moshe Soloveitchik for this idea that perhaps a Malik exists ad hayom hazeh. Now just one more idea to share, and that is the question of the morality of killing a guy, right? That sets some pretty major implications for us. That means that there's a requirement ad hayom hazeh of killing a Malik. So is there a way to discuss it? So the first thing to discuss is, what is there such a thing as morality? I mean, do we say that, oh, well, doesn't sound good to us, so therefore we're going to say that it's immoral. Who says that that's immoral? Maybe that's the Torah. What defines morality? The Torah defines morality. So I remember somebody once gave this year in Hillcrest when I was in high school or college, I think, and he made this point that any time that the Torah, that there's a mitzvah that seems to be somewhat immoral, so we have the right to be makil on that. And he brought a couple of proofs to that. So I that's a little bit problematic. I mean, who defines what morality is? That means that maybe we should be makil on bris mila because we find it to be immoral to do bris mila. So who's going to define immorality? So I came across an article from Rabbi Lamb a couple of years ago on the topic of the seven nations, where he raises this, it's about this issue of how is it moral to destroy all seven of the seven nations? And what he said, he in defining the question, he says it's not, we can't define morality. The Torah is defining morality. It's not a question of our morality against the Torah. It's a question of the Torah against the Torah. The Torah itself is the one who gives us a commandment not to kill. So if the Torah is giving us a commandment not to kill, why does the Torah then also give us a commandment to kill all the seven nations? Right? So, and the Torah also gives us an idea that there's such a thing as tshuva. So the Torah is giving us that there's such a thing as tshuva, and, or that there's such a thing as people, you know, children that don't necessarily have a full choice in that, right? So why does it's the same Torah that has the question. So it's not a question of our morality against the Torah, it's a question of morality against morality. So that's question A. But the, in terms of resolving this specific issue with regards to Amalek, like. So our idea of that all of the men, women, children, etc., that they all have to be killed. So the person, Rabbi Nadi Helfgott, he points out that the Torah never says that. That's not explicitly in the Torah. The only thing that's mentioned, the only place that's mentioned, is in the command of Shmuel, the command of Shmuel to Shaul. The place where they all have to be utterly 100% destroyed is the command of Shmuel to Shaul.
Right.
Now that command is not necessarily the command incumbent on each individual. That's a command that's being given to a king. So remember, before we mentioned that maybe that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik points out that there's two ideas of the mitzvah of killing a malik. There's the individual din, there's individual halacha, and then there is the national halacha. So it could be that on an individual level, we don't necessarily have that responsibility, that obligation.
Yeah.
That obligation is only on the national level. And that means that when we're going to war against another nation that is out for our destruction, so yeah, then that perhaps fits we understand that a little bit better, that we have to destroy all the men, women, and children. But the idea that in each individual is then going to have that requirement to kill every woman and child they happen to meet on the street, so perhaps that obligation, that requirement, perhaps falls away. So that maybe makes it a little bit easier to deal with the mitzvah of destroying a malik. But at the same time, it's a pretty powerful idea that Moshe Soloveitchik presents, that there is still an idea, a title called a malik, that a person can earn, and we have a responsibility to defend the Jewish people and as a nation to defend ourselves against such people. Okay. Yes.
Well, but we've